Welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, November 30th, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, it is the Monday after Thanksgiving, and I don't know about you, but I'm still feeling somewhat comatose from all the food and friends and family. We came home to my hometown of Washington, D.C., and we were actually planning to leave yesterday, but we can't get enough of the leftovers and the most wonderful mother in the world, so we decided to stay over. So I am, for the first time, hosting and recording this show from my mother's dining room on a cell phone because her telephone isn't working. So anyway, you know, it's all worth it because I get to be with my friends and family members for a little bit longer on this holiday, and I hope you are all having a fantastic holiday. If you've continued it a little bit like me, or if you're still getting over it, I hope it was wonderful for you, as wonderful as it was for me. Well, this is the holiday season, of course, and all of you out there, I know, small business owners, for many of you, this is your busiest time of year, so thank you for taking a moment to join us. We're going to be talking about some things today that are really important for every business, and it's a topic we all know and love and would like to learn more about. We can never learn enough about this topic. It's managing the money and the financial end of your business and doing your financial planning. And to help us do that today, we've got my guest, Steve Wilkinghoff. He is the author of Found Money, Simple Strategies to Uncover the Hidden Profit and Cash Flow in Your Business. I cannot get enough of that thought. So we're really excited to have him here today. Steve Wilkinghoff authored this book, of course, and his sort of found money story started about 7 years ago when he had a full-time accounting practice. And he was doing very well, and just, you know, things just progressed as they do for many of us as small business owners. And he was, of course, steeped in money all the time. And it's great that he used his experience, he says, to create this book and this wonderful collection of information that he can share with us to help us carefully define the financial results that we want in our business, and then how to, quote-unquote, he says, reverse engineer that result so we have absolute clarity on our goals, which, of course, will help us reach them faster. Steve Wilkinghoff, welcome to Indie Business Radio.
Thank you very much, Donna Maria, and
Was it that easy? You worked in finance for so long, you just decided, you know, I've got a book here?
Not quite that easy. You know, I had a practice for a number of years, an accounting practice, solely with dealing with owner-managers and small businesses particularly. And, you know, what really got me is every year I would sit down, go through their financial statements with them, and at the end of it all, it felt like there was something missing. You know, although we had gone over the previous year's financials, they were going to walk out of my office, and there really wasn't anything concrete in their mind that they could do to create the financial result they wanted the next year. So I kind of started, you know, thinking and doing research and studying and taking a whole bunch of extra training and developing thoughts and articles over those 7 years, and it kind of culminated in finding this book. I'm like, you know what, I need to get this out there, because just talking to business owners one at a time isn't really going to get the message out there that I want to get out.
Right, that's so true, and certainly none of us can get enough of information to help us manage our businesses. Now, one of the people that worked with you on this book and someone that it seems like you consider to be a mentor is Michael Gerber. Tell us a little bit about that relationship and how he has influenced your writing.
Yeah, I mean, for years I was a huge Michael Gerber fan, you know, had read all his E-Myth books and had followed them, talked about them with my clients. And when I started writing my book, you know, as I got to the end of it, I realized, you know, really what I've gotten here is something that shows the business owner where to find the money in their business. And Michael Gerber's whole career and his passion has been systematizing the business. And so I actually emailed him and said, gee, introduced myself and said, I've written this new book. You know, I've been a fan of yours. I think it might be a kind of a missing element. You've talked always about systematizing the business. Now I figured out a way, I believe, that we can show the business owners what part of the business they should systematize to make the money they want. And Michael Gerber's a busy guy, so he didn't respond back to my email, which they're all, you know, if you ever correspond with any of these authors, they're all very busy. So after a few more emails, He finally emailed me back, and we set up a phone call, and realized that, you know, there was a real synergy between my work and what he's done. And so he offered to write the foreword for my book at that point, and actually put me in touch with his publisher, and ended up getting, because I was going to self-publish my book at that point. And then he said, no, I think I can get you in with my publisher because I like the book that much. And one thing led to another, and it took off.
Well, that's exciting. So he talks about systematizing in general, and you talk more specifically about doing that where our businesses are concerned. And I love that about your book, because the financial end of it, you know, it's kind of like, we have small business owners. Do we have like a love-hate relationship with money?
Do we?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's always puzzled me on a number of factors. One is that for so many people, you know, I mean, business owners for one, and people in general, money kind of, although we all want it and we all need it, we've kind of been raised ever since we've been little children. It's kind of something you don't really want to admit to people. And what I find is when it comes to owning a business, that creates some real problems because, you know, my belief, and I talk about it in my book, there is only one single reason any business exists. And the reason is to make money. You know, if you look at the history of business, you look at the structure of commerce, that's what a business is supposed to do. And before anyone starts accusing me of being mercenary and greedy, it's not about that at all. But you have to look at, you know, often business owners get mistaken and they make wrong decisions, and they'll tell me things like, well, my business is here, or I run my business because I want to help people, or I want to create a product or service that helps people, or I want to create employment. And the fact of the matter is, as good and as wonderful as all those things are as goals, they're absolutely terrible, worthless ideas for why the business exists. Because the hardcore truth is the business needs to make money to be sustainable. And once it makes money, then and only then can the business owner make the decision to give money away, to help others, to create employment, to do all the things that they talk about. But the business has to make money first.
That's a really interesting way to think about that. So tell me this. You talk a lot in your book about what you call found money. That's the title of your book. What exactly do you mean by that? How did you come up with that title?
Actually, the title was suggested to me by another author named Michael Port, who's written Book Yourself Solid and has given me a good endorsement on the book on the back cover. And, you know, he had taken a look at some of the early work on it. And the key is, in any business, because of the way they're structured, whether it's a brand-new business or an existing business, business owners overlook all sorts of opportunities for making money. They go out and they chase another customer, or they do marketing and try to get another sale. And, you know, those terms may sound generic, and for most business owners they are. But the truth is, if they only could peel back the layer, and if they learned how, and now I show them how, but if they could peel back the layer of their business and say, okay, really, when it comes down to it, what products and what services do I make money in my business doing? And when I peel it back, what customers do I make money servicing and attracting? And as soon as they take that picture, peel back the layer and look at their business that way, it's like when you peel back a piece of rotten bark on a log in the forest and there's all sorts of ants scurrying under there. That's like all these little dollar signs in their business. There's all sorts of found money right underneath the skin that they just haven't been looking for because they didn't know how to look for it.
So let's talk for a second then, Steve, about the bulk of my audience, who are people we're talking to today who are starting businesses or have small businesses in large part because they love what they do. And they make something by hand, or they create something, or they provide a service that they feel is vital to their particular customers. And yeah, money's important, but the fact of the matter is they started it because of a passion. Help us get from that sort of passionate feeling to some of the realities that you're talking about, where money and the fact that it's the sole reason for a business to exist first. Help us move from the passion part to the money part. I almost feel like I'm asking about like marriage. Like you fall in love, everything's all, you know, there's you know, stars are flying and fireworks and stuff, and then you have all this passion, and maybe it never goes away, maybe it does. But ultimately, there's this reality thing that sets in. How do we prepare ourselves for that? Because some people are hard hit by that, don't you think?
Absolutely. And let me draw it this way. You know, every one of our listeners and you know, who are sitting there who have a passion at one point, had enough of a passion that at that point they could have made two decisions. They could have continued following their passion as a hobby or an interest or something, or they could have followed their passion as a business. Now, your listeners made the decision to follow that passion as a business, which I commend. I mean, one of the best things in the world is to make a business of doing something you love and are passionate about. But that very decision of saying, I'm going to transfer my passion into a business, instantly makes it absolutely critical to them that they make sure their passion can sustain itself. And the way it's going to sustain itself through a business is by having a business that's going to make enough money. Now, I'm not talking about millions of dollars. When I talk about making money in a business, every business needs to make a different amount of money, because every business, really all it needs to make is enough money that it fulfills the business owner's what I call dream lifestyle. So that means, how hard do they want to work? How much do they want to work? What type of work do they want to do? And once they get clear on that, they can figure out how much money they need, and then that becomes the target for the business. And that gets back to that reverse engineering idea. For some business owners, that might be $20,000 a year. For some, it could be $50,000. For some, it could be $100,000. I don't know what the number is, and it doesn't matter. The mechanics are the same. If you want to transfer a passion into a business, then you need to make sure the business can fund that passion and fulfill your dream lifestyle. And until you've made that leap, it's really, you know, you're forever going to be spinning your wheels.
I would imagine that what you just said comes from a lot of experience with people bringing you their books and asking you to help them with them.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book, and it comes directly from my experience of years working with small business owners, is trader versus taker mentality. And I'll explain that. Most business owners, particularly small business owners, particularly ones that have a passion that try to make it into a business, fall into a taker mentality. And by that I mean they take their passion, they start doing things in their business, they try to make sales, they try to create product or services, and then after all the dust settles, so to speak, they sit there and say, well, what can I take from my business? You know, can I take enough money that I'm happy from my business? Can I take the time off I want from my business? Can I take a vacation? Take, take, take. The problem is that puts them as nothing but a helpless passenger. It's the business in charge as long as they have that mindset. What they need to do is say, to translate my passion, I'm going to be a trader, not a traitor, a trader, T-R-A-D-E-R. By that I mean they're going to trade their passion, their time, their capital, their energy, their risk, because, yes, most business owners have a fair amount of risk in their business. And in return for that, what do I want from my business? So, for example, I might want to work 3 days a week. I might want to make $30,000 a year. I might want to, you know, take 3 weeks vacation in the summer with my kids. Whatever that is, what am I going to give my business, and what do I demand in return? As soon as I do that, I can reverse engineer it and say, okay, now, what kind of customers do I need? How many of them do I need? What kind of products and services do I have to sell them? So again, it's turning the traditional business on its head.
This is really interesting, because when you first described the taker mentality, I imagine a lot of people go, well, what's wrong with that? I want my business to provide me with things that I can get out of it. I want to go on two vacations a year, and I want so. But it wasn't until you talked about the trader mentality and compared them that it seems like it makes more sense. So the context for what you said is really important, don't you think?
Absolutely. And you're right, because everyone wants those things. However, when they're stuck in the taker mentality, it's like they only take what's left over. And I can guarantee you, from my experience with business, you have seen it, your listeners have felt it. If you leave yourself taking what's left over in your business, there's never enough. There's never enough money, never enough time, never enough stress-free vacation. It just doesn't exist, because your business expands like a big balloon to suck up everything that you're willing to give it. So you need to sort of put the brakes on and transfer that thinking into being a trader. You know, my business is going to give me this, and I'm going to give it this in return. Same as if someone came to work for me or for you, they wouldn't just come start working tomorrow. December 1st is tomorrow. No one would come start working for me tomorrow and say, you know what, I'm going to work really hard, Steve. I'm going to do my absolute best. And at the end of the month, pay me. Well, they wouldn't know what I would get. I mean, maybe I would pay them what they thought. Maybe it would be less. Maybe it would be more. But they would be completely in the dark until that time rolled around. And then suppose I paid them $200 for the whole month, and they'd be like, oh, that's terrible. And if they were like a business owner, they'd then say, well, maybe January will be better. And they'd go right back to work hard for me again. And at the end of January, they'd see how much I would pay them. Well, no one would live their life like that. Before they came and worked for me, they'd say, okay, Steve, I'm going to work 40 hours a week. How much are you going to pay me? Let's negotiate back and forth. And then we'd have the agreement. And then we would both know what they were trading and what they would be getting. But when it comes to businesses, no one does it like that. And it's always puzzled me and always bugged me.
Well, we may all start doing it like that now, thanks to my guest today, Steve Wolkinghoff, and his book, Found Money: Simple Strategies for Uncovering the Hidden Profit and Cash Flow in Your Business. We're going to come back and pick Steve's brain a little bit more about this taker versus trader mentality when we come back right after this break. Don't touch that mouse. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm here this afternoon with my guest, Steve Wolkinghoff, author of Found Money. And Steve's been sharing some really useful insights for indie and small business owners to kind of make a transition from what he describes as a taker mentality to a trader mentality. So, Steve, okay, here we are. It's the end of 2009. We've had this sort of taker, I'm just going to cover my bills and you know, take from my business what it gives me. I've had that mentality. I want to change it for next year. Where do I start?
Okay. Excellent, excellent question, because the one thing, although this twigs to a lot of people, and we've talked before, and one of the things, a lot of business owners are scared because being a taker in a lot of cases has allowed them to get by, at least. And being a trader sounds scary and it sounds different, but it doesn't have to be scary because there's a definite process for it. And, you know, one of the first steps, or the first step, is to spend some time defining what I call your dream lifestyle. And it may sound funny coming from a book about found money, but actually take some time, you know, write a couple pages or a couple paragraphs, whatever it takes for you, and define your dream lifestyle. And by that I mean, look at how much time you want, not how much, and we're not talking about what's possible in your mind. Throw that out and just say, if there was no barrier whatsoever, what would my dream lifestyle look like and how would my business fit into it? For example, my dream lifestyle might be work 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And I want Monday and Friday off, and I don't want to work more than 24 hours a week. So it's 8 hours on the 3 days I do work. Oh, and by the way, I only want to do sales and marketing. I don't want to deal with any of the administrative side of things, anything like that. And by the way, I want my business to pay me $60,000 a year. I'm just throwing a number out there, okay? And don't worry if that's pie in the sky. Don't worry if you're thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get there. That's not the issue right now. Just define your dream lifestyle. And the reason that's so critical is because that becomes your ultimate target for your business. Now, I'm not saying your business is going to get you there next week, next month, next year. In fact, your business may never get you there. But either way, it's so critical that you define your dream lifestyle, because the whole idea of owning a business is a journey. Okay, so now after you've done that, now you've got to define what's the cost of your dream lifestyle. And by that, I mean, okay, I've got my existing business, and it has a certain overhead, and it pays me a certain amount of money. And I say, you know what, I want an extra $60,000 a year, because I define it in my dream lifestyle. Going back to my dream lifestyle, if I'm only going to work 3 days a week, I have to hire someone to work Mondays and Fridays. So what's that going to cost me? Maybe $15,000 or $20,000 a year. And if I'm only going to do sales and marketing, I have to hire someone to be administrative. Now, maybe it's someone part-time who works out of my office. Maybe they work out of their house. Maybe it's a virtual assistant. I don't know, but spend the time to price that out. Maybe that's an extra $5,000. Okay, so now you've just seen, you've just added 60 plus 15 plus 5, so you've got an extra $80,000 of money your business has to create to serve your dream lifestyle.
Okay.
And so what's happening here, and I'll just do a process check for our listeners, is it's a very subtle process from going to defining my dream lifestyle to now suddenly we've pulled it back and we've put a number to it. And the miracle of any business is as soon as you put a number to something, a financial number, because remember, your business is a machine that creates a financial result. Everything that goes on in that business ends up creating a financial result. Every decision in your business is a financial decision. Whether you hire somebody, whether you fire somebody, whether you go out and get a new customer, whether you build a new product, whether you price a new product, every single one of them ends up having a financial result. The miracle of that is, so now once you've defined the financial result you want from your business, now you can start to work backward. So step two was define the cost of your dream lifestyle. Now you can start to look at, you know, so we're good in the next 30 days. That's a pretty good target for the next 30 days. And then the business owner needs to start thinking about, well, how am I going to get there? And, you know, and there's a number of tools. I've got some on my website. I've created some software. I do group coaching programs and everything where I take business owners through that very process to say, okay, now to get the money that I need for my dream lifestyle, what are the different combinations of customers and products and services and pricing, and basically build different scenarios, and then they can pick one that says, okay, over the next 3 years, here's the targets I need to get me so that 3 years from now, my business serves my dream lifestyle. And once they've done that, now they can actually set specific targets. So next month, next quarter, next year, here's my target. And what we've done is we've taken the fear out of it, because we're never going to bet the farm, so to speak. We're never going to risk the business on a single decision. Because we have a current benchmark in our business, even if it's a startup, we can measure what's happening now, and we can always try things going forward and see if it moves us closer to our goal or not. So over time, we end up moving towards our goal. So we've stripped fear out of it, and instead we've replaced it with clarity for the business owner, and the whole while they're moving towards their dream lifestyle. It's like the analogy I was given, I'll give away my age here maybe, but when I was a kid, I remember watching The Wizard of Oz. And it started out, for the listeners who are too young, it started out in black and white. And then Dorothy in this tornado, and she came out in The Wizard of Oz, and she opened her house. And as soon as she opened her house, the whole black and white movie turned to color. And I believe it was the first time Technicolor or full color was ever used in a theater, in a cinema. And getting this level of clarity and this process and these steps in your business is like suddenly getting that colorful scene. For the first time, a lot of business owners finally know exactly what they need to do to get what they want. That's a long answer, but there's a lot of things there that people can work on.
Well, that's a good point. Let's go back through it. It's really three steps. I mean, you're right. It's a lot of stuff, but let's just try and synthesize it. And I think I've been taking notes here, so maybe I can do that, because what you're describing is, first of all, going from the, you know, the taker to the trader, is to first really define exactly what you want your life to be like. And this involves, as you just said, it's not just about the money that you want to make, although that's significant, but you're talking about defining it down to the neighborhood you want to live in and the, you know, everything that, that your business gives you. Okay. All right,
absolutely.
Good. So we can all do that. There should be no fear involved in that. However, no. Steve, I think here's where I think the fear comes in. I want you to help us overcome this.
Sure.
Because the reality is, tell me if you've experienced this or seen other people, the reality is that when you write it down, it becomes real. It becomes a goal that you may fail at. So
right.
Let's talk about balancing, or what do we need to focus on in order to overcome, just, you know, wipe that out of our vocabulary or the realm of possibility for us? Because that's the first step. Because if you don't write it down, if you're correct, then your chances of achieving it just drastically drop, and that's not what we want.
Absolutely. So let me rephrase that. So the concern is if we write a goal down, suddenly it becomes tangible, and that means I might fail at it, and failing is painful. Am I understanding the question?
Yeah, and that combines, oh my gosh, this is going to be an awful lot of work. That comes back,
absolutely.
I guess.
Absolutely. And you know, it will be work. There's no question about it. The thing is, it's remarkably less work than most business owners think it will be, because now there's a process to take them through. You know, I guess there's two extremes. You know, let's say there's a business owner that is so stuck in the taker mentality and just getting by that they absolutely refuse to sort of let go with one hand and grab the next rung on the ladder and write that goal down and define the dream lifestyle. To be honest, you know, they're never going to make the leap to a trader, you know, until they accept the fact that they have to at least try to set that goal. Hey, and the good news is there's nothing wrong with failing at that goal, because it's a goal you've created. You know, I can set a goal that I want to make $1 million, and if I miss it, and only, I'm doing the quote symbol with my hands if your listeners could see me, if I only end up making $750,000 instead of $1 million, isn't that better off than only making the $60,000 I was making a year ago?
That's a really good point, obviously, yeah.
You know, there's an old saying, and it's attributed to Confucius. I don't know if it's actually a Confucius saying or not, but I've had it on my desk for years, and it says, he who aims for the stars aims higher than he who aims for the trees. And that's so true. You know, if you define your dream lifestyle and you only get halfway towards it, in most cases, it's way higher than what you're living right now. So really, how big of a failure can it be?
Good point. Excellent point. Okay, so you write all these things down, and this is something that, you know, we do this every day in our minds anyway, right? So we're constantly defining things that we want out of life. So
absolutely.
Hard.
And I think, I'll just jump in there if I can, and you're right. A lot of, you know, the steps we're given, and a risk the listeners might have, and say, oh, I already do that. You know, I'm a big goal setter. You know, I personally am a big fan of Tony Robbins, and a lot of listeners probably are. So a lot of people might say, no, I already do that, Steve. So I have it covered off. Well, I'll challenge the listeners to say you probably don't, because what I find with most business owners is even when they set goals, they never link them to the business that's supposed to create them. Because let's face it, if I'm a business owner, I can set the best goals to make all sorts of money, you know, however you want, whatever books, whatever gurus you want to listen to on that area to define the money I want and how I'm going to get there. But if the business is the vehicle I'm using to fund my life, I have to connect it to the here and now at the business level, and that means the here and now being customers, products, and services that are going to get me there. Otherwise, it's like having your tires spin on your car while you're up on a hoist. There's no connection with the ground, so that car's not going anywhere. So even if you think you set goals, ask yourself if they're connected to your business. And if they're not, you need to circle back, and do it over again.
Okay, Steve, say that again. If your business funds your life, it must be connected to what?
To your goals and your dream, right? So, I mean, if I'm a business owner and I myself was typical 10 years ago. I had goals. I'd write my goal statements down. I'd put them on the mirror. I'd do all the things the goal gurus would talk about. But when I started a business, and that was my livelihood, suddenly it was something that, okay, my business is what's going to get me there. So if I simply put something on my mirror that says $1 million, and I go and run my business like it's going to make me $10,000, I'm never going to make $1 million. I don't care how positive I think about it.
So, Steve, is one of the ways we can do this to use, like, a vision board?
I think it's a great way because it's going to reinforce it, you know, and always, every time you look at your vision board, connect it back to that vision has to be connected to my business, right? And that, as a business owner, that's what you always have to cycle back to and say, you know what, that's my goal. What's going to get me there? It's the business. It's like standing on Earth looking at the moon like they did in the 1960s and say, we want to get there. Well, that was just wishful thinking until they created the vehicle, i.e. the rocket, that was going to get them there. Once they decided to create the rocket, they could backward engineer it and say, what has to go into it? How do we have to design it? What parts have to, right down to the little O-rings and the nuts and bolts in there.
Right, but, right. Okay, this is so good because I think, you know, with particularly today, Steve, because so many people really are understanding and embracing the notion that, you know, owning a business of your own is quickly becoming a non-option. It's something that whether you have a traditional job or not, you know, you've got to figure out how to do this and address it in a way that people have never really had to address before. So
absolutely, and you know, to follow up on that, suppose we're talking about a listener that has a job and is starting a brand new business to work on the weekend, or, you know, develop a passion part time initially. Well, the mechanics are still there, you know, and they need to define what they want from their business to develop their passion so it develops the right way, or else they're going to be doing stuff evenings and weekends and making a little bit of money here and there and thinking it's not worth my effort. So,
right.
You know, part-time, full-time, small-scale, large-scale, whatever your vision is, the mechanics have to be there. You have to make the business do what you want it to do.
That's right, or we don't want to be slave to the business. We want the business to be a slave to us. So that's
absolutely
great. So we'll come back.
Yeah.
We're going to talk with Steve Wilkinghoff, author of Found Money, a little bit more about these great financial concepts. This is the time to incorporate them into your business so we can all start 2010 with a whole new approach. This is great stuff. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Back to Indie Business Radio. We're having a fantastic conversation today with Steve Wilkinghoff, author of Found Money. And it's great because we've been talking about how to find money in your business, and we haven't even talked for a second about making a sale. This is all about preparation, what goes on in your brain before you put yourself out there as a small business owner. Or maybe you're already out there and you have to regroup. That's fine, too. We all have to make changes as we go. Steve, we've been talking about identifying with clarity and specificity exactly what you want your business to produce for you. So help us with some tips that we can use in the last quarter, the last month here of 2009 to set us up for 2010.
Sure. You know, one of the first ones, and you had mentioned it before the break, is, you know, take the time, now that you've defined your dream lifestyle, crank up a vision board, you know. Do it up however you want, you know, share it with a friend. That was one of your suggestions, Donna Maria. You know, I mean, nowadays, Facebook, Twitter, there's all those things. You can share it with your friends. You know, give yourself some public accountability and do that and let your friends, you know, help reinforce you. Now, make sure make sure it's supportive friends. You know, I know a lot of these goal gurus will say, you know, make a goal and you tell your kind of, you tell somebody that you know is going to make fun of you if you miss. I'm not a fan of that approach. If I'm going to share a goal, I'm going to do it with one of my close friends that is going to help me in a supportive way, right? You know, like, hey, Steve, how are you going on that goal? Because there are times where, you know what, we all get tired. It's a fact of life and business, and we get overwhelmed. And it's nice just to know someone's going to sit there and say, hey, Steve, you know what you were just complaining about, how busy you are? Are you actually working on stuff that's going to take you towards your dream lifestyle? You know, take a look at your vision board for me, Steve, and tell me if you're working on stuff that's going to get you there.
Right.
You know,
okay.
So that may be a great thing to do as well.
Good. Good point. So can you share some examples of people that you've worked with that have, you know, started a business and kind of come to you with, oh, my gosh, what have I done? I'm working 100,000 hours a day. I need help. How can I use your principles to help me?
Yeah, absolutely. There, you know, I'll give you a couple of them. Sure, it depends how much time we have. One was, you know, a friend of mine who also owns a business in town, and he had been talking for a while about his business, and like a lot of business owners, he was a small retail store, and had paid himself a decent wage over the years, and he's looking now to maybe retire within 5 years. He wants his son to come into the business, but to do that, he'd like his son to earn more money, and it was just your typical business where, you know, he's in his retail business all the time, not making as much money as we want. So we took a look. We started analyzing his customers and his products and his services on a number of different ways. And for one, we found, like a lot of business owners, he was just creating prices just kind of off the cuff. You know, he figured that he would mark it up, you know, whatever, he was 67% or 70%, whatever it was for him, just because that's how he'd always done it. So interestingly enough, we walked through his store. And I said, well, what would happen if you'd mark it up by 80%? Oh, well, I could never do that, he said. You know, people, and I said, well, okay, hear me out. And it's always fun to challenge business owners, and it's good to have a coach in that respect or a friend, because sometimes you need somebody to challenge you. So I said, hey, let's walk out in your store.
Why did he say, oh, no, why did he think that that was not possible? He think people just wouldn't pay that much?
Yep, and he's like almost probably 90% of the business owners. As soon as you talk about a price increase, they say, no, I could never do that. The funny thing was, we walked out into his store, and I said, okay, we started walking through some of the things he was selling, and there was a suit there that was priced at $650. I said, okay, if your customer comes in and buys this at $650, and I said, and you had priced it instead of 67% at 80%, you know, I said, the price would be $665 instead of $650. For example, I said, is the buyer of a $650 suit not going to buy because it's $665? And he looked at me and he said, well, no. Okay. And so as we walked through his store and we started to challenge his assumptions, we realized, and on doing some math, the amazing thing was he did a price increase in his business over the next week, and if all that inventory sells, or by the time it sells once, there's about an extra $62,000 of income right there from that one little thing. And that gets back to defining his dream lifestyle. Well, if my business is going to make more money, one of the ways might be to increase prices. Now, maybe he couldn't have. Suppose he was in a tight competitive business where he had to bid something. Okay, granted, he may not have been able to raise his prices, but he had to look at the option. You know, there was another case I was working with a client who was in a service business doing a lot of consulting and coaching and wasn't really getting the results they wanted. Every year was falling behind slightly, making, you know, by the time they paid their debts and their taxes, was just getting by, you know, or $1,000 behind every year or $1,000 ahead every year. So, again, we drilled into the services this person was delivering, looked at the customers they were delivering them to, and found out, not surprisingly, if you've dealt with other businesses before like I have, about 60 to 70% of his time, his effort, and his stress was coming from a particular customer segment. But that same customer segment was only producing about 30 to 35% of the profit he was making. So think about what I just said there. About 70% of his customers were producing about 35% of his profit.
Not a good situation.
No, that's like wasting, what, 2.5, 3 days out of every week on stuff that's not going to make you money. So just having that clarity, we quickly turned that around and said, well, could we go out and attract these other customer segments that make you money? Well, yeah, he said, but I never have the time to get there. You know, which, because he was too busy doing the other work that wasn't making money. Now, did we bet the farm? Did we make decisions that would risk the business? No. We said, okay, let's just start making small steps. Let's price these people that cause you more hassle a little bit higher, and with some of the ones that won't take you up on your offer, go out and find customers that are more profitable. And he knew the ones he had to go talk to. That was the thing. Like most, and that gets back to the whole concept of found money. You know, I didn't come up with a great marketing campaign. I didn't write a wonderful copywriting sales letter. We just looked at his business and said, look, you know where the money is. I'm just simply helping coach you through the process. Because as soon as we looked at it, he said, oh, I know. You know, there's 10 other people just like that that make me money that I can go talk to. And I know I should because they've talked to me before and said I'd like to talk to you sometime, but he never gets around to doing it.
Right,
so
right.
Found money. And now he's moving that business towards where his dream lifestyle should be.
So I love that example because is it true that every business you've worked with along these concepts have had at least one product that they could logically and easily raise the price on that took care of some of their problems?
Yes. Absolutely, 100%. But with a caveat, it's not always obvious how they can do it. You know, a great example I'll give you is...
It's comforting to know, though, that it is there. Because I'm glad you said yes to that question, because I was hoping that's what you would say.
Yeah, and here's an example. I did some work with a dentist. Dentist had called me, and to be honest, at first I thought, there's no way I can help a dentist. Because most of the dentist's work, you know, comes through Medicare or any of the other insurance programs, and they're fixed fees, what they can charge. But we talked, and what I found out very quickly, talking to the dentist in about an hour, was that not every insurance company pays the dentist the same amount. Certain providers pay more for the same procedure. So what we ended up doing with that dentist was saying, well, what if we managed your appointment blocks so that insurance company A that pays you the least, when patients phone up from that and they want to book in a cavity, they can get in next Thursday because maybe he only books 2 days a week for that insurance company. But if company C, a patient from company C phones up whose insurer pays a lot more for that procedure, they can get in Friday of this week. So we freed up more capacity for the higher paying insurance companies, and by doing that, raised his prices on the average. Again, found money. These were people who were calling. These were the thousands of patients he had. We made some tweaks by becoming aware of the situation and found money right there in his practice.
So a lot of this is just clearing your mind enough, clearing your calendar enough, and going to your special quiet place and looking at the issues that you're talking about. Because if it's true that everybody has a product or two or three like that in their arsenal, then it's not as hard as we might think to get started doing this.
And that's the beauty of it. You hit it on the head. It's not at all. And that's why, you know, getting back to our theme of some people are scared or there's fear when we talk about creating your financial target. Every listener out there, every person that has a business, could in 5 minutes list two or three other products they could easily offer their customers, but they don't because they don't have the time to do it. But now they know why it's so important, and suddenly it's easy to get that motivation.
Right. So let's say we set aside some time, you know, during quiet time over when the retail crazy holiday season ends, and we kind of take a look at this stuff. So a lot of people, I'm guessing, would ask the question, okay, I've identified the two or three products that I can do this with. Of course, the first of the year is the perfect time to raise prices because it makes sense and everybody's doing it. But
absolutely.
How do you introduce this to your customers who have become used to you handling them in a certain way? Because for some businesses, Steve, this is going to be a big step. Some of their prices are going to have to go up a lot because a light bulb's going to go off and they're going to realize, gee, I am way underpricing the value of what it is I'm selling.
Absolutely. And there's something I talk about in my book called Customer Profitability Mapping, which basically lets you rank your customers on their profitability ranking and what I call a resonance score ranking, which is a subjective, how difficult are they to deal with. What you find then is you end up with these three different customer types within your business, and they all need to be treated differently. So some customers need to have their prices raised, but you have a great relationship with them. Well, that's a much easier thing to do. You can sit down with them and talk to them and discuss, because you've got such a great relationship, why your price has to increase. You know, sometimes it's because they don't buy everything they can from you. They're only buying one or two things. Sometimes it's because they're friends and you haven't had the heart to charge them more, and you should have been 5 years ago.
Right.
As soon as you go to them and say, gee, you know what? You know, we love to do business with you, but, you know, I also need to have a sustainable business. I need to raise your price 10 or 15%. Scary as that is, a lot of times you find those people say, gee, you know what? I kind of expected you to do that a couple of years ago. I'm surprised you're finally getting around to it. I mean, over the years, I can't tell you how many times I've had clients raise prices, and they'll phone me back or email me and say, you know what? The client laughed at me and said, oh, it's about time you raised your prices. I was wondering when you would get around to it.
Wow.
Now, true, some people are offended, and you know what? The truth is, if you raise your prices, not every customer is going to stay. But there are tools, and I've got some in the book, and there's some on the website where, you know, you can look at, if you've got a certain gross profit in your business or gross margin, and you raise your prices 10%, you can figure out how many customers have to leave or can leave before you're still in the same position. For example, you know, depending on your margin, if I raise prices 15%, in some cases, one-third of my customers can leave, and I'll still make just as much money.
Right, right.
And realistically, one out of every three won't leave for that price increase. And even if they do, you're still made the same amount of money you did before, but you've only had two-thirds of the customers. Does that sound like we're getting towards where your dream lifestyle is, about maybe working a little bit less and making the same amount of money?
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I'm glad that you said that. And if we combine the steps that you're talking about, Steve, with some unique and maybe interesting new ways to market using technology and some of the digital media that's available, then we can probably quickly replace those customers with new ones.
Absolutely.
On the internet.
And yeah. Again, Donna Marie, you hit it on the head, because now you know, using that technology out there, you know exactly what kind of customer you want to replace, what you want to attract, and what you want to sell them. So you're not going to do the blanket advertising anymore where you just hope someone comes in and buys something from you. You're now on a hunt, like a hunter with a powerful rifle, zeroing in on, this is the particular customer type I want, this is the particular product or service I want them to buy, and here's why. And then you can use all the power, I mean, social media, all the tools out there right now, you know, Google local searches. I mean, you can pinpoint who you attract to your business to the nth degree, and now you know why you want to do that, and you know who you want to attract.
Yeah, and I love what you're saying about become a hunter. And I know a lot of people would think, oh, gosh, you know, I don't want to be like those big companies that track me down everywhere I go and, you know, drive me nuts and everything. But in today's small business environment, we're really talking about something very different, right?
Absolutely. You know, I'm not talking about being abrasive at all. I mean, I'm a case in point. I don't consider myself a pushy person, but if someone expresses an interest in what I have or what I can offer, I will continue to follow up with them via email or a phone call until they finally say, you know what, it's not right for me. Because my assumption always is, until they say it's not right for them, they're just too busy to give it the time they need. And I believe in what I sell and what I offer, so I'll just continue to follow up. Now, I've never had anyone get mad at that approach. That's way different than someone that continues to push when you said, I'm not interested. Right? So we're not trying to be pushy big companies. We're simply trying to attract the customers we want and stand up for ourselves and say, you know what? You need what I have. And I want you to have it, and here's why. And here's what I want you to pay for it.
That's such a great point. And when you believe in your product, it's not that hard to say that. Steve Wilkinghoff, author of Found Money, thank you for joining us today. Tell us what websites we should go to get more of you and your financial tips and your book.
Sure. Thanks, Donna Marie. It's been fun being here. My website is www.foundmoneybook.com. And on there, you'll find there's some clips about, there's a free chapter from the book you can get. You can also get some Found Money tools I talk about in the book. You can sign up for my free newsletter, which please do, because in January, people on my newsletter list are going to be given the chance to do some group coaching with me to kick off 2010 in a special way. It's a good website. I update it regularly. And please check it out.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that. We're all going to go over to foundmoneybook.com and have a look and get some more of financial tips to help us get 2010 started off on a great No. Next week on December 7th, my guests will be Ron and Tazra Dawson. They are a husband and wife team and the authors of a new book called Refocus, a fantastic book for tips on using the latest digital technologies to expand your business. Plus, they're going to share tips for success in business with your spouse, and you know that topic is near and dear to my heart because I am in business with mine. I'm so excited that you joined us again. This is the kickoff of the holiday season. Happy holidays to you. I'm looking forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for joining. See you on December 7th. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.